This is 92.5 Phoenix FM, community radio for Dublin 15.
Broadcasting from the Blanchestown Centre, this is Phoenix FM.
It is so unpredictable. How do you predict what's going to happen inside the chamber?
For listeners of Phoenix Live 2.5 FM, it is WrestleView. This week we're going to have a bit of a different show. Obviously last week was Mike's last show with us for the time being. He might pop in on special occasions. I'm away at the moment, so what I'm going to do is, if that happens, or if we don't get around to recording a show, or if wrestling is just terrible, which if you're watching WWE it is, I'm going to continue to go through my vault of old WrestleView International Desk shows, and it's not going to be content that has aged really. We did nearly 400 shows, so there's a lot of really cool concept shows that I did there with different guests and different hosts. This one I like a lot. It's from a segment called the WrestleView Chamber, where we took a topic and broke it down. This one is on the SmackDown 6. Now, at the time, I wasn't aware of that, or what that was. So, Corey and Gary kind of went into it. It's about 40 minutes long. It's a very interesting listen. But, pretty much, guys, this is what I want to do with the show. When wrestling just isn't... Because, I don't want to do a show where I just rag on wrestling. That's not fun for me. It's not fun for anybody. What I want to do is, I want to kind of give content which is very, very good, a new audience, and also be able to enjoy watching wrestling. And that's hopefully what myself, Marcus, and Tony, and whoever else bring on to the Wrestling Rewind will be able to do. But I figure let's embrace the Rewind name and give life to these older shows. So check this out, guys. It's a really good listen. We'll talk to you next week.
WrestleView Chamber. I am Darragh O'Connor. Although I'm not alone, I'm joined on the line by Gary Harden and Corey McChrystal. How are things, Gary?
Yeah, not bad, Darragh. How are you?
Good, man. Good. Of course, before we bring Corey in, this was your segment. You texted me there during the week about this. So kudos to you, because I'm going to say right now at the beginning of the broadcast that I had no idea about this time period, because I actually stopped watching then completely. For about a year and a year and a half. So from the end of 2003 into 2004, 2005. So it's basically going to be Gary and Corey discussing this with my moderation. So Corey, you of course were a big fan of this time period as well, were you?
I was a huge fan of this time period. This time period, I would say, rivals the new era of wrestling that we saw in the early 90s, where stars like Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart finally got screen time over more established, slower, larger stars like Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage.
Okay, so what we're going to do now is, Gary, outline exactly what topic we're going to be discussing here on the WrestleView International Desk Chamber, and then we'll take it from there.
Okay, yeah, so for those who don't know, the SmackDown 6, as they were collectively known, it kind of took place between August of 2002 into the early 2003. It was Edge, Rey Mysterio, Chris Benoit, Kurt Angle, Eddie Guerrero, and Chavo Guerrero. They ended up splitting off into tag teams, so the tag teams were Edge and Rey, Benoit and Angle, and Los Guerreros. at the time it was being booked, by Paul Heyman. So he had the main event, or the championship level guys at the time, was Big Show, Brock Lesnar, who held the title, and Undertaker. So he wanted to make kind of good and proper use of the guys just a little bit below on the card, and this is what he came up with. It also saw the introduction of the new tag team titles, and it started by being involved in the tournament. And interestingly enough, the tournament final match was Edge and Rey versus Benoit and Angle, which took place on the 2002 No Mercy, and that won match of the year, which is, I mean, that was on the same card that it was Brock and Taker in Hell in a Cell. I'm open to be corrected, but I think that was the same card.
I think you're correct, but I'm going to have to do...
You are correct there. I have the card in front of me. It's Brock Lesnar with Paul Heyman versus The Undertaker. On that, you also had the Intercontinental Unification and the World Heavyweight Championship.
Kane and Triple H.
And yeah, a very good match with Rob Van Dam and Ric Flair. And, of course, the Cruiserweight Championship was there as well. And a terrible World Tag Team Championship, Chris Jericho and Christian versus Booker T and Goldust. So, a sleeper card.
That kind of shows, that's quite interesting. Like, that tag team match was just the absolute pits. And then Paul Heyman booking a tag team division, and that match won match of the year. And they carried on. They went two or three pay-per-views and they just tore the place down. The Survivor Series that had the Elimination Chamber, the debut of the Elimination Chamber.
Yes.
That had a three-way tag elimination tag team match as well. Mm. And I mean, that nearly overshadowed the Chamber. It was that good.
Well, Gary, just to stop you there, the 2002 time period into 2003 and 2004, it's when SmackDown really got its footing as far as hitting its stride. And there were a lot of elements for this. I should give some background. In 2002, I actually stopped watching because I wasn't watching SmackDown religiously. I was watching Raw, and Raw was so atrocious. By the middle of 2003, I just kind of tapped out there. So it's interesting. Everything you're saying, it was existing as its own brand there, and they were actually doing everything correctly. But in case anybody was wondering, this is how I ended up watching TNA, because I did not want SmackDown. I instead decided to leave the WWE completely.
Yeah, with Heyman booking, SmackDown was always the kind of the wrestling show.
Yes.
Where Raw was the one for your storylines and to further all that stuff.
Gary, I would go stop you there and say Raw was the Triple H show.
Yes.
in that time period, yeah. So to give the likes of your Benoits and Angles and Eddies this kind of free reign, on TV, on SmackDown, they'd have single matches between these six guys. They'd have varying triple threat matches involving three of the six guys. And they were given time, and these guys just tore it up week in, week out.
Oh, God, yeah. I just to cut in, when you were saying when these guys actually had singles matches with each other, you had six guys who collectively had a brilliant tag team feud, but then you go into the six guys intertwining fates, and you look at guys like... Edge and Kurt Angle, who had a fantastic rivalry, which essentially, raised both of those men's careers. I mean, if we have to think about where those two men would be right now if they didn't feud with each other, Kurt Angle would probably still have his hair. we would have never got the "you suck" chants, which were so important to getting Kurt Angle over as a heel again.
Mm.
Edge would have, I actually sometimes do think that Edge would not have reached the ascent that he did if he didn't get, those crucial victories over Kurt Angle that made him a legitimate threat. I think he would have stayed in mid-card hell forever.
Do you think so?
Totally agree.
Agree. Because remember, he was already getting over. He had established himself as a tag team competitor and had won the King of the Ring.
This is true.
It was the Kurt Angle matches.
Exactly what Gary's saying. I mean, prior to the Kurt Angle matches, Edge was feuding with William Regal in Brass Knuckles on a Pole matches.
Okay, yeah.
And after those after the matches with Kurt Angle, I mean, I don't want to knock William Regal. He's certainly one of my favorite wrestlers, but the way that was booked, you would never see William Regal on, you know, he just wasn't as an insurmountable opponent as Kurt Angle would be considered.
Particularly at this time period, you're 100% right. Gary, please continue.
Yeah, just to what Corey or what we were saying, like when they got involved in singles matches, away from the tag team stuff, because I mean the tag team stuff was on another level, and it's something that we definitely haven't seen, like tag team wrestling at that level. I mean, in the last, well, up till the present day, like they seem to be putting a little bit more time into the tag team division now. But I mean, this is the archetype. This is what they should be looking at. On how to do proper tag team wrestling. But yeah, no, the singles matches as well, anytime they got involved together. And bearing in mind, the team of Benoit and Angle was built around that they didn't trust each other, and it came from them having a singles feud that they ended up kind of becoming this tag team, because at the start of the tournament, there was spaces left. So Stephanie, in her infinite wisdom, decided to pair people together. And one of the pairings was Benoit and Angle. And I mean, when they faced each other, I mean, those matches were just unreal. And as a team, they had such great chemistry as well. And
Gary, can I just ask you, I hate to interrupt, but was this the feud, because Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit feuded numerous times, was this the feud where we saw 9 chained together German suplexes?
Yes. Yes.
Because each man was known for chaining together 3 German suplexes.
Yeah.
That was their version of the 3 Amigos. And there was, I seem to remember, a distinct cage match where Chris Benoit chained together 9 German suplexes.
Yeah, that was from this feud, and then they ended up teaming. Unreal. And like, bearing in mind, Edge was kind of new to the singles competition, relatively, at this stage. And as you say, he had won King of the Ring, and he was a multiple time Intercontinental champion at that stage. But working with the likes of Eddie, Benoit and Angle definitely pushed him on into the main event status. Ray had just kind of debuted as well, and his style offered something to it. If there was a weak link in the six, it was Chavo, but the match level was so high that didn't really matter.
Mm. Well, okay, just moving on here a little bit to this. Let's look at the legacy of the SmackDown 6. We have Chris Benoit, who is anathema right now in the WWE, officially. Unofficially, he's still hailed as one of the best professional wrestlers to ever lace up a pair of boots. Kurt Angle's in TNA. He has a Hall of Fame legacy in both companies and is an integral part of TNA. Edge, of course, is retired due to his numerous injuries, but considered to be a phenomenal wrestler in his own right. Rey Mysterio, still kicking around, multiple time world champion. Eddie Guerrero sadly passed away, but considered to be, again, a great. And Chavo Guerrero's in TNA right now doing nothing. Who is the biggest success out of the SmackDown 6? We already know who the weakest link here is, and it is Chavo Guerrero, sadly. But Gary, who do you think benefited most from the SmackDown 6 here?
Well, I mean, first off, they all went on to win world championships apart from Chavo. I mean, you could say he won the ECW championship, but
yeah,
I mean, it's thin, you know? But I mean, Edge went on to be a world champion, as did Ray, as did Benoit, as did I. Probably Edge would be my choice, because before it, I wouldn't have thought he would make a one-time world champion. But to go on to win so much, Edge would be my pick as to who benefited and gained most from being involved in the SmackDown 6.
Okay. What about you, Corey?
I would have to agree, though. I would put in an addendum and say that Rey Mysterio's credibility was definitely helped, because really, this was one of the first times we actually saw Ray, you know, working with guys who were out of the cruiserweight division. I mean, I seem to remember previous to previously to this, you know, WWE had an extremely vibrant cruiserweight scene.
It's true. It's very, very true. You know, you did actually have quite a bit of emphasis put onto this. And this was around the same time period as well when Velocity was there. And they were really emphasizing the cruiserweight division before it went to die, basically. So you're right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was on, it was actually on SmackDown that Rey Mysterio won his first world title. Some would say in dubious booking circumstances following the unfortunate passing of Eddie Guerrero. And also the way he was booked to lose consecutively to Mark Henry, Kane, and the Great Khali. But still, it, in the long run, helped his credibility immensely. But really, I would say the main victor out of this were the fans and the viewers, because these were some fantastic wrestling matches.
And again, it's a shame that I did miss it. I will have to go back and have a look at it, but it's definitely a time period for a lot of wrestling fans that sticks with them, particularly why when the news of Eddie's passing hit a lot of wrestling fans very, very, very severely. And then, of course, when the Benoit tragedy happened, even more so. But Gary, the question I have for you is, would this work in 2013? Could they do something like this now on a SmackDown, for example, which suffers so many issues and is in a rapid decline?
I think it could be done. But you have to bear in mind that if you look at the SmackDown 6, Edge has retired. As you said, both Eddie and Benoit have passed away. Angle was never 100% to begin with, like wrestling fit. So Rey's had a huge amount of injuries as well. And I think this level of high impact wrestling from this time, like going back to 2002, definitely played a part in Edge retiring, what happened to Eddie, what happened to Benoit. Angle's multiple injuries and Rey's multiple injuries. The only one who kind of has came off unstaved has been Chavo. So, that would have to be looked at because, you know, if you don't learn from your past mistakes, you're bound to endure them again, you know? Mm. So if I think it could work, but they'd have to take a lot more care of the guys who could potentially be involved in the six.
Okay. Corey, what do you think about this? Do you think it could work in 2013?
I do, but if I can put on my Kevin Sullivan fantasy booking hat here, I mean, you do have certain elements in the WWE today. You have great wrestlers and even some great teams that have already been put together, such as Road Scholars and Team Hell No.
Yes.
But at the same time, you would have to really, there was just this something that was with the SmackDown 6 that is really not, it was like catching lightning in a bottle, really. I mean, there was a perfect storm of wrestling, but also, you know, booking, because these men, it's something we see so often now in the tag team division in WWE. There's just no reason to it. I mean, none of the teams ever seem to have a reason to want to win matches. There's no underlining that they want to be the best team. And
well, hold on, Corey, just stop it there. The prime example of that is when Teddy Long comes out and books a tag team match.
Yes.
Randomly.
And we see this time and time and time again. These thrown together tag team matches, or worse still, when a team of two singles competitors gets thrown in with what we're supposed to take as an established tag team, and it just becomes a demolishment. I mean, it completely undermines the meaning of a tag team match, where it's a team working together to, you know, it's the sum of two halves working together, greater than what you would think it would be, basically.
Mm.
I mean, this team's supposed to come together to form something that shouldn't just be beatable by two guys working individually. That's the tag team division in a nutshell. And JBL recently summed it up greatly when he was explaining why Kane and Daniel Bryan work work so well together. He basically said, when you stick two guys who are world heavyweight championship caliber athletes in the ring, it doesn't matter what tag team they're against, they are going to win. And, you know, is that true? We saw in the heydays of the tag team division, we saw guys like the Dudleys and Edge and Christian, you know, pull off great victories against, you know, so-called world heavyweight champions or WWE champion tag teams that are just hastily thrown together. So I think this emphasis on the WWE tag team division that's already there, I mean, we have some great teams together. The personal favorite of mine would be the Primetime Players if they were ever actually given any more momentum. I just think for this to happen, we would actually need to, well, I say we, but the WWE basically would need to have an element wherein they do have people that work well together with great tag team chemistry. And it does work extremely often. I mean, even in TNA, we saw guys who were great singles competitors like Bobby Roode and James Storm come together to form a fantastic tag team. So they need competitors like that, but they also need competitors who can work together, you know, in singles competition. And right now, I don't really think that that's there, so to speak.
Well, see, if I can just weigh in on that, I think there is a potential for something like this to happen again, but the brands have to be established. You can't have the Raw 6 or the SmackDown 6 that are exclusive to said brand and appearing on Raw or appearing on NXT. I don't think that in the way the structure is now, it could support something like this. And Gary, I want to turn to you here. Would you agree with that? Do you think maybe the Raw Super Show makes something like this completely impossible?
Yeah, I think so. And especially with the extra hour on Raw, you know, it's overexposure. Like, the SmackDown 6 worked so well was because it was number one specific to SmackDown. And it created such a buzz because, as you say, not many people watch SmackDown. So it was a whole word of mouth thing, which I don't think you'd get today, especially because, I mean, everybody on Raw and everybody's on SmackDown, you know, you would have to reestablish the brands as well, as you say there.
And can that be done? Because even with NXT now as well, which we praised greatly last week, and I will urge everybody to watch it again continuously, but that is so awesome because it's unique to itself. It looks totally different, feels completely different. And yet there is an element which upset you, Gary, with the whole telegraphing Big E Langston going to win the title. Sorry, guys, yeah. Spoiler alert. They telegraph it, and it's slightly muddled because you have the Shield shown up on Raw. Oh, wait, Seth Rollins doesn't have the belt. What's going on? But according to the thing, he does. You know, there is this muddling of the water between the whole of the WWE, and I think that needs to be addressed.
That was last week's NXT.
Yes.
That was televised, was the one Big E Langston won the title.
Yes.
And like, but we knew about it since, what, about the end of October? So, yes. I mean, it's hugely telegraphed, and that's a problem. But that's a total side problem. They would have to reestablish the brands because it has to be something that's unique to the show, to one show. It can't be across the board because then you get overexposure.
Well, what do we think about this idea that we saw something like this with TNA in its heyday, shall we say, 2005 to 2008, I would say, would be the TNA heyday with some bright spots in 2009, that they took a similar idea, had the set group, you know, we're talking guys like Joe, Angle,
Styles,
and all that kind of group that were working together. And they produced some of the best matches. Then you had incomers like Sting, Raven, just to kind of pad it out. Do you think maybe they took that idea from it, or at least the structure of something like the X Division?
Structurally, yeah. You see, the other thing as well you have to take into account with the SmackDown 6 is that they were buoyed by, like, say, having Brock Lesnar and Undertaker and Big Show at the time on top, but they were also helped by, you know, really good mid-carders as well. Your Matt Hardys, your Tajiris, your Jamie Nobles, who could kind of, you know, just kind of flit in. So like it could be Eddie against Noble or something, and they'd put on a great match, but Kurt would interfere, something like that, you know. They,
okay.
As you say, they had the padding, and they had really, really good padding.
And I think that's important. When you have an overarching storyline like this, you need to have all the elements, and I think that's something that, if you want to draw comparisons to the NWO, was the reason why people lost interest, because there wasn't that padding to help it along. It was just people putting shirts on.
And it
on
became
shirt.
Too overexposed.
Exactly. Again, a yeah. problem that WWE still hasn't actually learned. So to sum this up, Gary, to end this segment and end the WrestleView International Desk here this week on Phoenix 92.5 FM, the SmackDown 6, did it bring wrestling back to the WWE, and do you think that it should be looked at maybe as a model going forward into the future?
Yeah, it definitely brought wrestling back in that time period where it wasn't so soap opera heavy. You didn't have Triple H fondling with a mannequin. It's a very, very good archetype for utilizing people who might have dropped off the main event scene but are still high enough in the mid card, but to give them something, you know, as Corey said, believable to work towards.
Yes. Yes. And I think that's important, because nowadays you look at any kind of match and they're feuding for no reason. Just if it comes across like we have time, we need to fill it with something.
Let's just throw something together.
Exactly.
So the premise is definitely one that could be looked at again. Maybe not, you know, a full-blown, you know, retelling of the SmackDown 6 in 2013. But there's definitely bits and pieces that could be looked at and tweaked to suit the situation now that would make a better overall product.
Okay, and Corey, final word on the SmackDown 6.
Was one of my favorite times in wrestling. It was great for wrestling, and I don't mean that in the sports entertainment way. I mean that in actual, you know, ring-based action. You did have the storylines like Edge consistently getting the better Kurt Angle, but then you also had the fantastic in-ring work. Really, it's a great time for wrestling. It really established SmackDown as the dominant brand in a wrestling sense. I mean, for a period of, I think, 3 or 4 years, every time there would be an interpromotional, you know, elimination tag team match, SmackDown would always win.
Oh, yeah.
Always.
Oh, yeah. And I think that's something that the remnants have been slowly washed away. But it makes more sense for people maybe who think this was silly, or the bragging rights, you know, that if that pay-per-view, for example, had have existed back then, I think maybe it would have meant something. But doing it 5 years out, 6 years out, it just makes it ridiculous. But I think with that, we're going to have to wrap up, guys. I want to thank you all for listening in to the WrestleView International Desk here on Phoenix 92.5 FM, and we will see you next week here on the WrestleView International Desk.